Good morning. Today is Daven Ksuvos Chaf Beis. We're in Chaf Alef Amud Beis, and we're finishing up on Kiyum Shtaris. The Gemara now has taken us on a detour regarding the topic of Kiyum Hashtar. So this is verification, authentication. Documents are going to be used as tools of collection, vehicles of collection. Not much has changed in the last 2,000 years. And good. And so when it comes to Hashtar, a problem that has existed also for thousands of years is forgery. And so what the Chachamim created is a security measure. As I've already acknowledged a number of times, it's not foolproof because there's no security measure that's foolproof, right? It adds a layer of security, a layer of protection. But obviously someone who's really interested and intent on jobbing the system he'll get away with it. But in other words, going to just make it a little bit harder. And hence we have a process called Kiyum Hashtar. So there are a number of halachas regarding Kiyum Hashtar. The Gemara already acknowledged that this whole institution is a din derabanan. Okay, even within the din derabanan, there are rules, right? It's no different than any other halacha. So there's a set of laws that govern Kiyum Hashtar. And so what we've been doing is that we've been going through the laws that govern it. The idea is very simple. This is going to be a really short intro because we've been doing this now for a number of days. But the idea is very simple. And that is that we're going to verify the signatures. Two witnesses already signed on the document, and so we're going to verify it. How are we going to verify it? So there are a number of ways which it could be done. The original witnesses can come and testify that that's their signatures. Alternatively, you can have other Edim testify that they recognize the signatures and they're authentic signatures. And then number three is that we can compare it against a document that was already certified. So there are a number of ways in which we could do the accomplish Kiyum Hashtar. And so once you're Mekayim Hashtar, you're doing so in front of a Beis Din. So a Beis Din is going to write an Ashrata. It's called an Ashrata. It's also called a Hanpek. It's two different terms. Okay, Ashra is just simply a certificate. Hanpek, I don't know the etymology of the word. I don't know where the word comes from. I have a really good feeling that it's not a Hebrew word, but regardless, he probably makes a comment on the etymology. But anyway, whatever the case is, in other words, they're going to just simply write a note on the actual document itself, and the note is very simple. Certified in front of this Beis Din. And then the three Dayanim are going to sign their name, and now we have a certified document. Yesterday was a challenging daf because there are a number of details that I tried explaining yesterday, but it's a little bit challenging. One of the points that we made yesterday that I'm struggling with is the idea that after it's certified, it's still eligible to be challenged. In other words, the borrower could still challenge the document, the shtar, even after the witness is signed, even after it was certified. Okay, and then afterwards, in other words, if he challenges it, so you're just simply going to have you have to sustain the challenge. You have to overrule the challenge. Yesterday we talked about how an Ein and a Dayan can combine in order to overrule the challenge. Okay, anyway, that was yesterday's daf, and obviously you can see I'm a little bit hung up on it because it's hard to understand how you can challenge it after it was certified. But anyway, that's what we discussed and have been discussing now the last couple of days. We are continuing in the Gemara. We are on the bottom of Chaf Alef Amud Beis and the last three lines. Amar Rebbe Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Shosha Shiyash V'Lekayim Hashtar. Okay, so three now are sitting down to be Mekayim Hashtar, and the three, of course, are a reference to the Beis Din. Right? You need a Beis Din for Kiyum Hashtar. It's going to be done in front of the Beis Din, and V'kari Ira Alachad Mehem. So, at that point in time now, I'm assuming it's the Lova, because the Lova does not want this document to be certified. So the Lova says, this is ridiculous. So you see that third judge over there? He points to the third judge, and he says, he's no good. In other words, he's puzzle. How could he be sitting and convening on this court? The man is puzzle. So, so the halacha goes like this. If the judges have not yet signed, so the judges all, the two other judges will just simply say, we object, meaning we object to your objection, right? You think, right, the pointing to the lova, you think that third judge is no good. We think it's fine. So if they object, and they do so before the signing, so then fine. But if they object after they sign, they can't object to the objection. Okay. Now, right. Okay. Very good. So Chaim says it perfectly. And that is after they sign. So they are now considered nogei b'davar. Meaning, and this is what Rashi says, and I'm just saying it over. And that is that once they sign on it, So now the embarrassment. The embarrassment of having signed on a document with somebody who was not worthy. In other words, somebody who's a puzzle. And so now their shame is on the line. And so now what they can't do is they can't overturn the two Edom who are saying that this guy is no good, because they're now facing the shame and embarrassment of having signed with somebody who's a puzzle. So they're now what's called in halacha nogeya bedavar. They have a vested interest. They are no longer impartial. They are now very partial, and therefore they can't testify. So the Gemara says, good, this halacha needs more clarification. And the Gemara is going to try to understand this halacha a lot better. Now, the way I'm presenting the sugya right now is going to be according to Rashi. Right? Tosos is struggling. Now, he does more than struggle. He really does not like this presentation that I'm about to do. Tosos feels that every step of the way is just simply fraught with difficulties. Tosos is going to give an alternative shot. Okay, so, but what I'm going to do is I'm just going to present the Gemara like Rashi. I will, to the best of my ability, present it as streamlined as possible, but I also know the questions that Tosos asks, and so therefore, I myself am going to be a little bit torn, as Rashi's presentation is going to be difficult and challenging, but I'm going to just say it over like Rashi. Okay, so that was called a disclaimer. So, the Gemara says, V'chosim, ira demaya. So the Gemara says, well, let's understand. In other words, again, there is they're litigating whether or not this third judge is qualified or disqualified. So the Gemara says, well, what are they claiming about the third judge? So ira demai e ir er de gazlanusa. So are they saying that the man's a gazlan? So the Gemara says trer treininu. So the Gemara says, okay. So you know what that's called? It's called 2v2. So therefore what? And Rashi writes on the top of the amud ki amri lo gazlo havelu trer trei v'lo miskasha b'hachi. Meaning, even before signing, so what I have two witnesses say that he's Goslin, and now the two other judges say he's not a Goslin, and even if it's before signing. So nevertheless, you're not going to become kosher. In other words, it's trey or trey, it's 2v2. And you still have two witnesses who are saying that he's a Goslin. And so just because the judges counter that argument is not going to change the accusation. Okay, so e eredib gam mishpacha, and the Gemara says, and now what? Maybe the claim is not that he's possible because of his actions. He's possible because of his lineage, and that he is really descendant of Avadim. And so his father can't serve as a witness or a judge. He can't serve as a witness or a judge. Not because of what he did, just simply because of who his family is. So the Gemara says, Gilui Milsa Bamu. So the Gemara says, that's Gilui Milsa. And again, I'm just presenting like Rashi. The way Rashi presents it is that this is not an Edus issue. This is something which we're all going to learn together. Meaning this is simply something which is factual. Who is this family? We're all going to find out. Meaning it's not he said this and he said that. It's something where, hey, let's just do a little bit of research and we're all going to find out who his family is. And so even after it was signed and the entire accusation is based on who his family was, hey, let's just do a little bit of research together. We'll Google him. Okay, I know. A little bit out of touch with the times, but we'll Google him and we'll find out who his family is. So the Gilui Milsa Ba'amahu. So the Olam Emelecha Ira de Gazlanusa. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go back to your first presentation, your first consideration, and that is that the accusation of these two Edom is that the third judge is a Gazlan. So V'kamri Hani Yedina Bei Da'avachuva. And now, how can the other two judges successfully defend the third judge? They'll say, we're not arguing with you. Meaning, we know he was a Goslin. And you know what else? He did tshuva. Meaning, we're not arguing with you. We're just adding a detail now that you didn't know. And that is, yes, he was a Goslin, but now he did tshuva. And how did he do tshuva? Rashi writes over here, very simple. Hey, shiva zegzela. He stole and he returned the item that he stole. And now, he's reinstated. Ah, so good. So now, that it happens to be the ending, according to Rashi, is perfect. Meaning, so now, the set of judges, the two judges, are not disputing the claim. They're just now simply adding a detail, which now actually rectifies the whole matter. Okay. Adkan, that ends that short discussion of the Gemara. And again, everything the way I present it is like Rashi. And it's not as simple as I presented it. See Tosfos, top Tosfos over here, who takes apart Rashi, offers a different pshat. We're going to go on in the Gemara. I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm also my Rabbi Abish, my Alivi, I love Rabbi Abba, the Menaka Osha Chachte. So where Rabbi Zera says that I heard this from Rabbi Abba, and I had to be reminded of this halacha, meaning I forgot it, But okay, good, I got reminded. And what's the halacha? Okay, so three people now are accepting a kiyum hashar, meaning that they're now receiving either testimony from the witnesses or from other witnesses, or they're comparing it to another shtar, and they were there, and they sat down, but most of Tlasa, right, as three judges, and then as they were about to sign, so Rachmanis, one of them just dies, right, immediately. Okay, so now, again, that's obviously a tragedy, but right now, how are they going to be signing on the document? What's the problem? The problem is that it was received in front of a Beis Din. Every one of the Dayanim is going to be signing, but right now, currently, one can't sign. He passed away. So what's the problem? The problem is that any other Beis Din who looks at this document is going to be scratching their head. What? In other words, the Beis Din of two? There's no such thing as a Beis Din of two. And he'll be confused. Oh, so how do you alleviate confusion? You just simply write down in the Ashrasa, it was received in front of three, and unfortunately, the third is no longer here. So you just simply write that down, and that will be a fine. That will be acceptable. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak v'Kasev Beishtara Denan Nafak L'Kadmana Beidina Sulot Sarech. So Rav Nachman says that even without a full explanation, as long as you use the word Beis Din in the Ashrasa, everyone understands that Beis Din is three. V'Dilma Beis Din Chatzafu U'Kedishmol Amar Shmol Shnaim Shedanu Dineim Din Ela Shenikra Beis Din Chatzaf. So the Gemara says, well, there is something called the Beis Din Chatzaf. In Sanhedrin, we're going to be hearing this a number of times. So here, we're hearing this now, in today's daf. And that is that two can serve as a Beis Din. It's not the best. It's not really preferred. In fact, there's a title, there's a label that falls in such a Beis Din. It's called the Beis Din Chatzaf. It's like, it's like an arrogant Beis Din, right, the chutzpahdik Beis Din. But it's still, call it whatever name you want to, it's still a Beis Din. So, even if I write the words Beis Din down, it could mean two if you subscribe to Shmuel. So the Gemara says, so how can Beis Din clarify that there were actually three people there? Dichsiv be Beidina de Rabbana Ashi. So the Gemara says, well, it actually says Beis Din of Rav Ashi. So Vidilma Rabbana de Be Rav Ashi, kid Shmuel Svirle. The Gemara says, well, it could very well be that maybe Rav Ashi subscribes to Shmuel and allows for a Beis Din of two. So, Dichsiv Bei V'Amar Lana Ravana Ashi. We were authorized by Rav Ashi to go ahead and to convene. Once you say that, I'm going to say Rashi's first shot. Rashi does give a second shot. But once you say that, so once Rav Ashi is authorizing us to do so, Rav Ashi wouldn't tell us to do two. He would tell us to do a Beis Din of three. Okay, so just a short discussion in the Gemara. In the event, I mean, how many times is this going to happen? But in the event that the Beis Din received the testimony, but then after having received the testimony, one of the Dayanim die, and now as you're writing down, as you're recording, you just want to be clear that there were three people here. I know you're only seeing two signatures, but there were three people here. So you could do so. The easiest way to do so, which was the Gemara's first suggestion, is just simply write that down in the Ashrata and say that there were three people here, but unfortunately, one is no longer here. Obviously, you can't sign on his behalf, but you're just simply writing and clarifying in the certification that there were three. Alternatively, you could write, we were authorized by Rav Ashi. Now, I understand, by the way, that's only going to help if you lived in the time of Rav Ashi. But we were authorized by Rav Ashi. Once you write that, that also clears it up that there were actually three judges that were there. Ad Kan, that takes us now to the end of Kiyum Hashtar. So tucked away now in the second parak of Ksuvos, our three blot of Gemara that we just covered, which takes us through the entire Parsha of Kiyum Hashtar. Obviously, Kiyum Hashtar is not a Ksuvos discussion, although, right, whatever. It's more of a contract discussion, so probably its rightful place belongs, let's say, Baba Basra, right? Probably is a quote-unquote better place to put it, but it landed here in the second Berak Ksuvos, and we know why. Meaning because there's an element of Kiyum Hashtar, of a Pesha Aser Hu HaPesha Iter, that the mouth that prohibits is the same mouth that can go ahead and permit, right? The concept that we've been discussing since the beginning of the Perek, right? Remember that first Mishnah where Rav Yehoshua says, here's where I'm going to agree. I'm going to agree where I go over to a person and say that this property was owned by your father and I purchased it from him. So that is a classic example of HaPesha Aser Hu HaPesha Iter. And Rav Yehoshua says, I'm agreeing with you. Throughout the entire first parak, I wasn't on board with you, right? Lo mipia anu chayim. In other words, she makes a claim. We're not gonna listen to her claim. But Rav Yeshua says that once you're making a claim with the process of a pesh asar or pesh iter, then I'm gonna believe you. Once we got onto that topic, the Gemara says, okay, let's talk about kiyum hashtar, because kiyum hashtar also can have an element of a pesh asar or a pesh iter. Notably, when the witnesses came and said, we signed it, but we did sign it, so they're certifying. But when we signed it, we were Ketanim, we were Anusim. So that's an example of a Pesh Asar or a Pesh Eter. So since there is an example of a Pesh Asar or a Pesh Eter within Kiyum Shtar, so then the Gemara said, you know what, let's just fill you in on all the details of Kiyum Shtar. Good. And now we are ending that topic. We're starting the new Mishnah. We're back to the broader discussion of a Pesh Asar or a Pesh Eter. Ha'isha. So we're in Chav Beis Amad Aleph. We are at the Mishnah. Ha'isha Shamra Eishas Ish Ha'yisi Ugrusha Ani. Woman comes into town, and now she gives the history, her biography, and that is, I was married, and then I got a divorce. So now Ne'emenes Sha'aser Hu Ha'pesh Yeter. Okay, so perfect. It's a excellent illustration of she can, once she is the one who's creating the Isser, she also now is believed when she releases herself from that Isser. However, if let's say she comes into town and now Adam say that she was married and now she's the one now who's claiming that she was divorced, now she's not Neman because it has already been substantiated that she was married. Obviously, she herself now, without documentation, without a get, she can't extricate herself from that. Now let's say another example. She comes in and she says, right, a terrible thing. I was taken into captivity. Generally speaking, when a woman's taken into captivity, so we assume that she was violated. But she's the one now who is providing the information that she was taken into captivity. Again, another perfect example of hapesh asur hapesh yeter. Again, same point, and that is that if we know that she was taken into captivity by Edim, so now she no longer has the credibility to say, but I was not violated. The Imishani says, Bawedem Harizelo Seitse. The Mishnah then adds one more detail, and that is that Imishani says, if all this is occurring after she got married, right? Remarried, if you will. Well, no, let me leave it ambiguous. Okay? In other words, you know, I'm trying to be as clear as possible. But right now, let's leave this ambiguous. Because the Mishnah presented two cases, and this clause of the Mishnah is right now unclear which cases it's going back on. So let's just leave it ambiguous. And later, meaning not today, but later we're going to try to go back and clarify which case it's going on. And if after she got married, witnesses come, so she doesn't have to leave her husband. Okay. Good. We will come back to that line. We will explain it better later. Okay, what's the source? How do I know this? In other words, on what basis, on Pasuk, do we know this principle of Pesha Asur or Pesha Yeter? So it is a tenet. It's fundamental to Ne'emanus, to credibility. And do we have a Pasuk? Meaning, obviously it operates on a Din Daraisa, right? Imagine she's saying she was married. She is now an Ashes Ish, at least according to her. And now she can go ahead and extricate herself from that by just simply saying, and I got a divorce, meaning that's amazing. What's the pasuk? So Shenemar, so the Gemara says, it comes from the following. Asra. So when it says Le'ish, when the father says, I gave her my daughter. Now, this Rashi points out, we're going to be learning this later in the Masechta, but the truth of the matter is we've gone over this point already a number of times, and that is the father has a right, min ha-Torah, to marry off his daughter. While the daughter is under his jurisdiction, while she's a ketana, even when she's an ara, so she's under the jurisdiction of the father, as such, the father can marry her off. Okay, so when the father says, I gave over my daughter in marriage, he created Isser. Meaning, what is he saying? My daughter now is Eishes Ish. Eishes Ish is Isser. And then he says, Lezeh, to this man. So what did he just do? He created Heter. In other words, now he's saying he's identifying who the man is, and now he's creating a Heter. And this is the source, for now, for the moment, this is the source of a Pesh Asur or a Pesh Heter. To which the Gemara has a fascinating response, Lama Likra. That's interesting. I need a Pasuk to teach me this. Meaning, Svarahu. So hu asra v'hu sharila. Well, I don't need a pasuk for this. Meaning it's common sense. You're not going to get this that often throughout Shas. Right? This comes up only a couple of times where the Gemara just simply brushes off the need for a pasuk by simply saying it's logical. Okay, now, right, it's just, we're in rare territory over here where the Gemara just simply says, look, it makes sense. Okay. The beginning of the sixth parak of Brachos, right, the Gemara did that as well. Okay, it doesn't happen that often. So Ella ki itzerich kara. So the Gemara says, fine. And the Gemara is totally convinced that we don't need a pasuk for this principle of hapesh asar, hu hapesh iter. And once we no longer need a pasuk, so then let's go back to what the pasuk we just cited. Meaning, so what is it coming to teach me? So itzerich kara lechad rav huna merav, dam rav huna merav, minayin la'av shenem la'asor es bito min ha-Torah. So the pasuk's coming to tell me a different point, which is the husband. The father's ne'emanus. Father has credibility. Meaning, even if nobody saw the actual marriage, all the father needs to do is just simply say that he married off his daughter and he is believed. Shenemar es biti natat liish hazeh. So, I'm sorry, es biti natat liish hazeh lamali. So the Gemara says, fine. So the first part of the pasuk is coming to teach me about ne'emanus, that the father has a special ne'emanus. And what is the ne'emanus predicated on? Well, the first thing, of course, is the pasuk that we just cited. But Rashi points out over here, it's really a function of biyado. Since the father has the ability to marry off his daughter, he therefore is going to be credible when he says that he did so. Okay? And generally speaking, we're going to hear this a number of times throughout Shas, that once something is biyado, once something is within your ability, so then you're ne'eman when you say that it happened. Okay, and it could be, now I'm just thinking out loud, okay, and I reserve the right to be wrong, it could be that this is a source, meaning the entire source of biyado is coming from this Gemara right over here. Okay, now, hazel lamali. So fine, so that's what we get from Ezbiti Nasat Li'ish. So that we get the idea, the concept of ne'emanus, meaning in this particular case. Now, hazel amali mi bai le chad Rabbi Yona, the ni Rabbi Yona is biti nasa li shazeh, hazeh v'lo liyavam. So the halacha of motzi shemra, meaning what I haven't explained yet, but it's not too late, is that the pasuk that we just cited is from the parsha motzi shemra. Okay, so just a quick intro to motzi shemra so that we can appreciate this next point to the Gemara. What is motzi shemra? So motzi shemra is where the husband is libeling his new wife. Married a woman, comes to court and says, the woman was not a basula. And it's just simply, he's maligning her. It's simply not true. Okay, so under those circumstances now, what are the repercussions when he's discovered to have actually maligned his wife? So the punishment is threefold. Number one, he must marry her, although that already happened. That already occurred. Number two, he cannot divorce her. And number three, if she wants to, he can. But if she wants to remain in the marriage, which, admittedly, by the way, that sounds a little bit tough. Meaning, he does not sound like the easiest person. But he is not have the right to divorce her. And number three, he's got to pay money, knas. In other words, for motzi shemra, the penalty for motzi shemra is the highest penalty in the Torah. It's 100 zuz. Okay, there is no higher penalty. I think I'm right about this. I hope I am. But I think I'm right. There's no higher penalty in the Torah for motzi shemra. Right? What are the penalties do we know? So in the third parak of Ksuvos, we're going to be talking about a man being ma'anis a woman. So for the onis, for the violation of a woman, so the penalty over there is 50 shkalim. So over here for motzi shemra, 100 shkalim. Okay? Okay, fine. Okay. Okay, fine. In other words, this is not. This is a penalty that he has to pay right now.
Right now.
In other words, right. For once it's discovered that he maligned her, so he has to pay it right now. Fine. So this is a partial motzi shemra. Fine. Now the Gemara is just simply pointing out, once we say the word hazeh, what is that coming to teach me? So it's hazeh v'lo liyavam. So the following halacha, which is, let's say now, a husband married a wife, he died. He has a surviving brother. Brother now has a mitzvah of yibum. Let's say, talk about an introduction to our brother-in-law. Let's say that the first thing he does on their meet and greet is he now maligns her. He says that when my brother married you, he thought you were a basula and you weren't. Okay, that's a wonderful hello. How are you? Okay, it's great intro.
Yeah, very effective.
Right now, the halach is as follows. In other words, again, they're going to go to court and discover and do the discovery in terms of whether or not she was in fact a basula or not basula. Let's say it turns out that he lied. So is he going to be penalized with all the penalties of Motzi Shemra? And really, we're focusing right now mostly on the money because they're not yet married. In other words, he's the yavam. And so what we're learning together is that he won't be issued the penalty of the 100 shkalim because he's not the husband. Now, that's a conclusion and that makes a lot of sense. What's the havamina? The havamina obviously is that he's the husband standing, meaning he's the yavam. We just spent a masechta talking about this. And so I might have thought that he's the husband standing and therefore he should be penalized in 100 shkalim. So what we're learning together right now is that he's not penalized in 100 shkalim. Let's move on. Tana Rabbanan. Ha'isha sham ra'isha sishani v'chazar v'amra penuya ani ne'menes. A woman who says that she's married, and then she says, no, I'm not married, I'm single. So she's believed. V'ha'ashavi l'nafsha chaticha di'isura. So the Gemara says, you know what, she's married, so that carries with it the weight of a neder. Right? In other words, when one wants to make an isra for himself, even if it's manufactured, you have the right to do so. It's called a neder. That's every neder. Every time you declare that this is prohibited to me, even if it's something which was mutter to you, it's now prohibited. In other words, that's the power of neder. So when she said she's a married woman, even if it's not true, shavya nafshe chaticha disura. So then when she says afterwards, no, I'm single, well, it's too late, meaning you made a neder. So amrava baravuna kigon shenasa masal advareha. So the Gemara says that we're going to learn something new today. Now, it's not new, meaning, but in other words, for us, I think, I don't know if we've covered this yet in Shas, but here's the halacha and the halacha of a masla. The halacha of a masla is that if she gives a plausible explanation of why she said she was married, so we are going to accept a plausible explanation. A plausible explanation will undo her original statement. Now, Tanya Namihachi, what's a plausible explanation? Gemara's going to give wonderful examples. So, Amra Eishas Ishani V'chazvarama Penuyani Enu Ne'menes V'imnasa Amasal Advara Ne'menes. So, the first we learned a brisa. The brisa just here introduces us to a masla. Now, let's go on. Umaisa nami bishachas gedola shaitza gedola benoi. There was a woman, she was beautiful. V'kavsa Allah ha'bnei adam l'kadisha. And as you can imagine, lots of suitors who are, right, propositioning her. Let's get married. Good. V'amra lehem mekudeshesani. And she says, boys, sorry, too late. Already mekudeshes. Now, what is that? It's called a rejection, but a polite rejection. In other words, she doesn't have to just simply say, no, I'm not interested in you. It's not you, it's me. Okay? Now, liyamim amda v'kitcha es atzma. Now, eventually, one guy comes in. Oh, okay, this one she liked. And so she accepted Kiddushin. So, amru la chachamim, mari la sos kein. So they turned to the chachamim and said, you know, for years now she said she's mekudeshes. Again, that's a neder. She makes herself usher. So now you're allowing her to marry somebody? So Amr lehem betchila shabaw alai anashim sheinam huganim amarti mekudeshetani. So she says, did you look at the guys who were suiting me to begin with? Did you see them? So in other words, again, it's a polite rejection. It's not you boys, it's me. And then Aksha shabaw alai anashim huganim amarti mekudeshetani, that's me. But then finally, here's somebody who I'm actually interested in. Good. So I'm no longer mekudeshes. I'm available. V'zu alacha ela Rabbi Acha sarabira lifnei chachamim b'usha v'amru im nasna amasla dvara ne'menes. And good. And now, this is a classic example of amasla. In other words, that is a plausible explanation. It's a wonderful explanation. And what it allows us to do is, it allows us to ignore her original statement. When she says mekudeshes, now with the explanation of, I wanted to reject suitors and it's really the best way to do so. I mean, the truth also is pretty good, but whatever. It's obviously going to embarrass them. And on top of that, you know, they may not take no for an answer.
I'm a Nazir and that works, but I'm married. How does that change your status?
Because you've accepted upon yourself, meaning Shavya Anavshe Chaticha Di Isura.
But it's fake. You're not married.
Every neder is fake. And what I mean by that, that requires an explanation. Okay, don't stop now. Listen to the second half of the statement. Every neder is fake, meaning when you say that meat is usser to me, is meat usser? No. In other words, but you've taken it upon yourself that you're not going to eat meat. That's the whole institution of neder. Oh, you can't, not regarding the privileges of a Kohen, but if you want to take on the Yisurim of a Kohen, by all means. So, by Minei Shmuel Meirav, Amra Tamei Ani V'Chaz Rav, Amra Tara Ani Mahu. So Shmuel asked the following question to Rav, right? Occasionally, we get interaction between Rav and Shmuel. Doesn't happen that often, right? Rav was in Surah, and Shmuel was in Narada. Two different towns. I wish I knew how far they were from one another, but regardless. Every now and then in the Gemara, we get direct interaction between them. So, and Shmuel asked Rav the following. My wife told me she was an Ida, and the very next day, she says, I'm not an Ida. So, Amrle afizu im nasna amasla lidvareha. So, once again, Rav says to Shmuel, good. And if she gives now a plausible explanation, so then what we can do is that we can ignore her first statement. So, Ne'amenesh, she's going to be believed. So, Tanimine arbaim zinman vafil achila v'shmuel uvda benafshe. So Shmuel's learning this now, presumably for the first time. He goes over it 40 times, right? Chazara needs to be 40 times. Chazara needs to be more than 40 times, right? Right now, this conversation I'm having is with myself. So Chazara needs to be more than 40 times. But the Gemara says elsewhere, Eino Dome. You can't compare somebody who goes over it 101 times to somebody who goes over it 100 times. So 101 times is considered Chazara. But anyway, he goes over 40 times. And still, when push comes to shove, when it comes to halach lamaisa, so Shmuel would not act until he consulted with Rav. And Tosus points out over here, he cites a Yerushalmi. Shmuel was asking, this was personal, meaning this actually happened to Shmuel. Now, of course, I never would suggest it, but the Yerushalmi says it. So I'm not suggesting it. I'm meaning it's in the Yerushalmi. Meaning Shmuel's wife said to Shmuel, not interested. And she said, I'm a Nida. Okay, so again, it's a polite rejection. And then the next day she says, okay, I'm no longer Nida. And Shmuel says, I'm saying it outside, meaning well, you can see this in the second Tosos on the Amud. And the next day she says, okay, I'm not an Ida. And Shmuel says to his wife, it doesn't work that way. Meaning once you're an Ida, so that's it, you're an Ida. And then days of separation and then mikvah, what's going on over here? And so she says, oh, yesterday, right, I had a big headache. And now I'm feeling better. So now this is a masla. So Shmuel goes over to Rav and Rav says, she's fine. Meaning, this was a personal event that happened with Shmuel himself. Tana Rabbanan, we are on Chavez Amud Beis. We are three lines down. The Gemara quotes the following brisa: Shnayim Omrim Mezer, Shnayim Omrim Lo Mez, Shnayim Omrim Niskarsha, Shnayim Omrim Lo Niskarsha. So there's a classic example of Edim Amachishim, 2v2 of Edus, and in two different cases. In case number one, two say your husband died, and two say he didn't die. Two say, case number two, two say your husband divorced you, and two say he didn't divorce you. Obviously, over here, there's no documentation. If there was a get, there doesn't matter who says what. Anyway, hareze lo si nase. So because now we are at a stalemate in terms of the edus, she shouldn't get married. V'imnisis lo seitse. But if she gets married, she doesn't have to divorce her husband. Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi omer teitse. And Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi says, no, she needs to get a divorce. Even my position is only if she got married after the second set of Edom came. But if she got married and then the conflicting testimony came, then she doesn't have to get a divorce. Okay. So the Gemara says, wow. Trei utrei nenu. Habala basham talukai. Meaning, I'm trying to understand. We have now two competing sets of testimony regarding her marital status. So, even if we let's go back to the sheet of the Chachamim, where she's allowed to get remarried. Ideally, no, but she's allowed to. And if she does, she can continue now with this new marriage. Meaning, I have a set of witnesses who say that she is married to another man. And I understand that it's conflicted with another set of witnesses. But in the very least, Asham Talui, meaning it's a suffix Isser. So the Gemara says, "Amar of Sheshes Kagon Shenisas Achad Me'edeha." So the Gemara says that she married one of the witnesses. Now, right? This takes us back because we had this discussion before. She can do that. She can marry one of the witnesses. So if it's one witness, so then the answer, of course, is no, because that one witness now is coming and testifying. So it could very well be that his testimony is just simply to provide himself an entrance and allow himself to marry her. Okay? So, but if it's two witnesses, so we assume objectivity when it comes to two witnesses. And she can marry one of the two witnesses. And because now he happens to be one of the witnesses who testifies that the husband died, from his standpoint, like he knows, again, from based on his testimony. Good. So he no longer is in a state of suffolk. So the Gemara says, good. So he, Gufa Basham Talu Kaima. Great. He's no longer in a state of suffolk. Let's look at it from her perspective. I know she married one of the men who said that her husband died. But there's another set of witnesses who said that her husband did not die. So from her perspective, it's suffolk. How can she remain in this marriage? But Omer is Bari Li. Gemara's answer, a little bit difficult to explain, but I'm going to try. And that is, she says, and I'm sure. Now, when she says she's certain, it's not the pshat that she actually saw her husband die. Because if that were the case, we learned back in Yevamos, she's going to be believed. Under any circumstance, she's going to be believed when she says that my husband died. So it's, but rather, she investigated the matter. She herself now is fully convinced that her husband died. And research was done. Enough information was shared with her that she believes that this information is absolutely true. Okay. Amar of Yochanan. Okay, so, more discussion of 2v2. So, Shai Momrim Mes, Shai Momrim La Mes, Arizalosinas, Vimnisis Lo Seitse. So, if the competing testimonies regarding whether or not her husband died, so ideally she should not get remarried, but if she does so, Lo Seitse. She can remain in this new marriage. Shnai Momrim Neskarsha, Shnai Momrim Lo Neskarsha, Arizalosinas, Vimnisis, Teitse. Now, what if we have 2v2 on whether or not she got a divorce from her first husband? So here, she's ideally not allowed to get married, and even b'dievet, if she does so, she must leave her second husband. Or in other words, Beis Din will compel her to divorce. And Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So within this position, Rav Yochanan, the obvious question, what's the difference? So Amar Abai Tirkama Be'ed Echad. So Abai says, okay, the Gemara is going to give three different pshatim, and we're going to go through all three. And that will be the end of today's daf. Okay, so pshat number one, Abai's pshat. And that is, and we saw this all the time in Yevamos at the end of Yevamos. And that is that even though the word Eidim was used, it actually means one witness. Ah, so now, one witness. Eid Echad, Omer Meis. So himnu Rabbanu Kebetre, Uchid Ula. Damer Ula, Komakum, Shin Ishem Nina Torah, Eid Echad, Arei Kan Shnayim. Vahai Dekaamar, Lo Meis, Havalechad, Vein Dvarav Shalach, Bamakum Shnayim. Okay, so. The first way to explain Rav Yochanan is that it's not 2v2, it's 1v1. One aide said their husband died, and one said their husband did not die. We know this, we just finished Yevamos. So we know this well. And that is that we have a special dispensation when it comes to a woman and the status report regarding her husband's demise, and that is one aide is going to be believed like two. So when the one aide comes and says that her husband died, so he's treated like two. And now, if contradicted by a single aide, so even though it's 1v1, Halacha views it as 2v1. And therefore, she can remain in the marriage. So the Gemara says, okay, great explanation, but then why not ideally? Meaning, if the Chachamim allowed the testimony of one witness that her husband died, as treated like two, so then even ideally she can now go ahead and remarry. In fact, that's the whole institution. The whole institution of Eid Echad is to allow her to remarry. So then why did Rav Yochanan say that ideally she shouldn't remarry? So the Gemara says, Mishum de Rav Asi, Dam Rav Asi, Hasir Mimcha, Akshuspeh, Ulazus Svasayim, Harchek Mimcha. So the Gemara says, well, if it was just one witness who testified that her husband died, so then lechatchil she can go ahead and get remarried. But in this case over here, another witness came and reported he's not dead. Now again, halacha views it as 2v1. That's true. However, let's just step back and look right now at whether or not this is really appropriate behavior. Meaning, yes, halacha treated the one witness like two. But there is one witness who is in fact saying that her husband's still alive. So, if you go ahead now and get remarried, even though it's perfectly within your right to do so, but because there's an outstanding witness who said that he didn't die, it's people are going to talk. And what you should do is that you should behave in a way that goes above any kind of reproach whatsoever. Okay? It's a level of conduct. Even though what you're doing is within your halachic right, but if it's going to induce people to talk about you, that's the kind of behavior that you should avoid. So can you get remarried? Yes. Recommended under these circumstances? No. Okay, fine. I understand the chazaka, but Eid Echad is Neman. In other words, one witness by Eid Asisha is in fact believed.
If you have conflicting witnesses and then you have a chazaka, doesn't that...
Yeah, but it's that one witness is just one witness. That's all he is. It's 2v1. Halacha views it as 2v1. Okay. Okay. Fine. Well, however you want to say it. But in other words, it's not recommended. So now let's take this scenario of 1v1 and now let's move it over to Gerushin. Now we move it over to Gerushin. So what's 1 aid when it comes to Gerushin? Nothing. Meaning, right? It's this dispensation of 1 aid being treated like 2, that's special and unique to death and Nadesisha, but not by Gerushin. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. So they're both agreeing that she's a married woman. And the one who's saying that she got a divorce, yeah, but he's only one witness. Okay, and obviously now they're both agreeing that she was married, and only one witness. One witness is now saying that she got a divorce. So that one witness is halachically nothing. Okay, fine. Rava Amar. So that's the first way to explain the halacha. That's a biased explanation. It works. It's a good explanation. Okay. The question outstanding is, so why lechatchila is she not allowed to remarry if one witness says that her husband died? Okay. Right. The pasuk of Ravasi. By the way, Tosus points out it's not the pasuk of Ravasi, meaning it's the pasuk of Shlomo HaMelech, but Ravasi quotes that pasuk often. Anyway, that's answer number one. Answer number two. Rav Amar lo lam treu trei ninu. Rav says no. This is an example of treu trei. This is going to be the second way to explain Rav Yochanan. Let's reset. Rav Yochanan says that if it's 2v2, meaning we're resetting. If it's 2v2 versus the fact that her husband died, ideally she shouldn't get remarried, but if she does, she can remain married. If it's 2v2 on the fact that she got a divorce, so then she can't get remarried, and if she does, teitzei. That's the halacha of Rav Yochanan. It begs an explanation, Mishna. So we gave Abai's explanation, we're moving on to Rav's explanation. So, I lost my spot. Just give me a moment. Ah, here we go. I'm back. Two lines before the lines get wide. Rav Amar Lolam Treu Trei Ninu. V'ra Rav Yochanan Verav Shel Rabbi Nachman Bar Yosef Begerushin V'la B'Misa. So, Rav Yochanan basically it says the following. Rav Nachman Bar Yosef. Now, that position is the one we saw in the Braisa, who says that if she gets remarried, she needs to divorce. Rav Yochanan is taking a split decision. I think he's right when it comes to 2v2 on divorce, but not 2v2 on death. My time, Amisa in Yichol HaMachashto, Gerushin Labala, Gerushin Yichol HaMachashto. So and as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, here is how he sees the difference. If it's 2v2 on the fact that her husband died, okay, the only way she's going to get remarried is only if she knows for sure that her husband died. Why? Because just for a moment, imagine, right, the severe penalties, we don't even have to get there. You're right, but we don't even have to get there. Let's say she's wrong. It's going to be apparent to everybody that she's wrong when her husband walks back, right? Comes back into town. Hi, I'm here. What is she going to say now? You're not here?
Dead.
Right. You're dead? Okay, so Correct. So this is something which is going to be verifiable, which, by the way, is one of the arguments the Gemara made at the end of Yevamos in terms of why 1 aid is believed. This is going to be verifiable. So if it's 2v2, the only way she's going to remarry is only if she herself knows with certainty. However, when it comes to Gerushin, in other words, she could still make the claim that she was divorced, meaning 2v2, and now what? Right? Even if the husband comes back and says, I didn't divorce you, meaning we do have two witnesses that said he divorced her. But ultimately, when all said and done, she could just simply say, look, two witnesses say, I did get a divorce. I'm sticking with it. So there, the halacha is not going to be as forgiving to her, because this is the kind of case where she can remain stubborn and obstinate. So the Gemara says, "Umi chatzifa kulei hai v'amar av amnuna ha'isha she'amar labala gerashin ne'menes chazak anisha me'iza paneh bifnei bala." So the Gemara quotes the halacha of Rav Hamanuna, which is, a woman goes over right to her husband's face and says, "You divorced me." Okay. Now again, if there's a get, there's no, we don't have to worry about claims. And in other words, obviously the get itself will be the proof. Obviously we're talking about where there's no get. And she goes directly face to face with her husband and says, "You divorced me." She's going to be believed. Why? Because nobody has that kind of chutzpah directly facing somebody and saying, "You divorced me." Meaning that because no one has that degree of chutzpah, so therefore she's going to be believed. So over here, the Gemara says, so why don't we just simply say that over here? So hani mila hechad aleka edem dekamisayile. Ava hechad ika edem dekamisayile miza miza. So the Gemara says, yes, we're going to believe her, but in a case where she's not emboldened. Meaning she's doing this on her own. No backing. Nobody's substantiating her. No one is cheering her on. When I say cheering her on, I mean no, she has no legal support. Under those circumstances, we say no one would have that kind of chutzpah. No one would have that kind of audacity. Therefore, she's believed. But in this case over here, two witnesses just said she got a divorce. Ugh, now she's got backing. Now she's got support. Now she goes over to husband and says, "Yeah, you divorced me. And I got two edim also who backed me up on this." So now she's emboldened, and now we don't have the chazakah. In other words, the chazakah is no one's going to be that chutzpah dick. Here, in other words, once people are cheering you on, so then you're going to be emboldened.
Why don't we look at it as Bori versus Bori? The husband is Bori, the shit, and she's Bori, yeah. And then we get the
Bari versus Bari is great if all we have is but just claims. But over here, we have Edim as well. So then, you're right. In other words, it is a consideration, but most of the time, Bari and Bari are great if it's just claims. It's more than that over here. We have Edim. So Rav Asi Amar, and here we are now to our third answer. Again, let's reset one more time. Rav Yochanan says that 2v2, that her husband died, so she ideally she shouldn't get married, but if she does, she can remain married. 2v2 on her getting a divorce, she is not allowed to get married, and if she does, Chachamim are going to separate her from her new husband. Again, what's the difference? We had Abaye's answer, we had Rav's answer, and now a third answer, Rav Asi. Okay? I bet you it's the Girsa over here changes it to Rav Ashi, right? We've seen enough Gemara where that's usually the format. Abaye, Rava, Rav Ashi. Anyway, Rav Asi, Amar Kegon Dami Edim Achshav Meis Achshav Girsa. So, let's say the news is coming in right now, right? This is up to date, all right? My husband just died. My husband just divorced me. So, Misa Leka Levura. Now, right now, right, in terms of the death of her husband, so this is just simply, at least, you know, in the current update, it's not verifiable right now. Ultimately, as the Gemara pointed out earlier, right, we're going to learn the truth. But right now, we don't know. And Gerushin Ika Levura. But when it comes to Gerushin, oh, really, you just got a divorce? Oh, okay. Can we see the paperwork? So, the Amrin Allah, Im Isa Dahachi Havale, Hava Achse Legitach. Meaning, if your claim is that you just got a divorce, well, if that's true, so then you should have a get. Oh, you don't? Oh, okay, fine. In other words, so that's the difference between 2v2 on Gerushin and 2v2 on Misa. Meaning, Rav Ashi's explanation is that she's saying this just happened. So, and now we understand, by Misa, we simply have nothing else to work with for the time being. And that's why, if she remarries, she can sustain. But on 2v2 of divorce, and she doesn't have documentation, and she's claiming that it just happened, well, that's really that's really curious. Why you don't have the documentation right now? Okay, that's the third possible explanation of Yochanan. We stop over here. Let's.
What are the Edim testifying to? They didn't see it yet.
That question, I discussed it with Rabbi Shabtai this morning. That question really bothered the both of us. Okay, so I'm saying is that I'm validating your question, right? The testimony of something didn't happen in of itself is difficult to understand, right? Obviously, I'm saying over the Gemara, that's my job, that's my responsibility. And then I'm also tasked with the responsibility of explaining the Gemara, but over here, I'm with you.
It could have been like these two witnesses were so familiar with this family that they spent time with them, so there was like no indication that these guys were divorced. They're like next door neighbors, yeah, and some living
what
together.
What are they testifying to?
Ben, I'm with you, but I'm more with Alan. In other words, it's hard to really understand and hear a claim made by witnesses that this event didn't happen. You were there every moment, every minute.
Right.
Okay. Good. Good. Yeah. I'm glad that I'm with you because same thing bothered me. Okay. Let's recap today's daf. Okay. Number one. Last discussion that we had in the Gemara regarding Kiyum Ashtar. Last couple of discussions actually. 2 points that we made regarding Kiyum Ashtar. One is that one of the judges who was about to be Mekayem Ashtar, so his qualifications were called into question by witnesses. And the other two judges say, no, he's fine. And what do we do under those circumstances? Meaning, how do we field this debate regarding whether or not he's qualified to serve as a judge? Good. That was one discussion. And the second discussion is a really rare event where the three judges were ready to ratify. They actually received the testimony, and then one of them just dropped dead. And then how do you write up the certification when only two judges are going to be signing? And so we learned how to write up the certification. Okay, that was two discussions, and that closes the chapter on Kiyum Ashtar. And then the Mishnah goes on to discuss the principle, the broader principle of HaPesha Aser HaPesha Yeter. The Mishnah itself gives two examples where a woman comes into town, we don't know her history, and she self-reports. I was married, I got a divorce. She self-reports. She says, I was taken into captivity, but I was not violated. So these are two classic examples of HaPesha Aser HaPesha Yeter. The Gemara's discussion opens up with, how do I know this halacha? Interesting, the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Gemara says, no need for a pasuk. It's a svara. It's simply logical. Okay. And as I pointed out today, you're not going to hear that often throughout Shas. The idea of the Gemara just simply saying makes sense. Okay, and it works. And therefore it works. Once we say it's a svara, we revisited the pasuk. What did we learn from the pasuk? The Gemara told us halachas regarding the pasuk. From the pasuk. Halacha regarding the father's ne'emanus. Halacha regarding the onus of motzi shemra applies to the husband, but not to the yavam. Okay. Then, the Gemara on the bottom of the Amud, introduces us to the concept of amasla. Right? Today, by the way, happens to be a lot of fundamental discussions. Right? Ksuvas daf chabez. The concept of amasla. A plausible explanation in terms of why she said what she said. So as long as it's plausible and it makes sense, so then we can ignore her original statement. Statements such as, I already received Kiddushin, when that serves as a polite rejection to suitors who are just simply beneath her, I'm saying from her perspective. So that's a wonderful explanation. A woman says to her husband, I'm in Nida, when meanwhile she had a headache. So that, and the next day she said, I had a headache. That's an amasla. That's a good explanation, and therefore we don't apply the rule of shavya nafshe chaticha di isura. And then finally, the last part of today's daf, we talked a lot on 2v2. What happens when we have conflicting edim talking about her status, giving reports about her status? What is she to do in terms of her ability to remarry? We saw a braisa, and then we saw a psak of Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan clearly makes a distinction of 2v2 of that the husband died, and 2v2 by Gerishin. 2v2 that the husband died, ideally she shouldn't remarry, but if she does, fine. 2v2 that her husband divorced, ideally she shouldn't get remarried, but if she does, Beis Din is going to separate her. What's the difference? Three explanations of why Rav Yochanan felt that there's a difference. Abaye, Rava, Ravashi. Adkan.